you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
This is Elaine Dickinson. I'm the stewardess. Captain Over's passed out on the floor and we've lost the co-pilot. The navigator, too. We're in terrible trouble. Over.
Roger, Elaine. Roger, I read you. This is Steve McCroskey at Chicago Air Control.
Back to you in a minute. Hold all takeoffs. I don't want another plane in the air. When the 508 reports, bring it straight in.
Yes, sir.
Put out a general bulletin to suspend all meal service on flights out of Los Angeles. Tell all dispatchers to remain at the post. It's going to be a long night.
An iconic clip from the 1980 landmark comedy Airplane from writer-directors Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker. I spoke with them recently for our Film Week and Chill event, paying tribute to Airplane. Also with us, the stars of the movie, Robert Hayes and Lorna Patterson Lembeck. I started off our conversation by asking how it worked, having three directors for the comedy.
The Directors Guild at first didn't... would not give us permission to share credit. So in fact, I went to the courthouse and changed downtown and had my name legally changed to Abrahams and Zuckers. That was actually my legal name for a period of time. And we went back then and we won. Actually, the vote was tied and Gil Cates, who was the acting president, because whoever was the president wasn't there that day, voted in our favor, and we got the credit.
I love it.
So I changed my name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. To Lorna Lembeck. Yeah.
What? So you had the success of the three of you writing Kentucky Fried Movie, John Landis directing, and did that give you entree with Airplane, or was it still a tough sell?
No, it was still a very tough sell. We tried to peddle it all over town. And the fact that we insisted on directing was, there were people who were willing to buy the script, but for three guys who'd never directed anything, who'd only been on a movie set once and had this outrageous idea about casting straight actors and comedians, it was a tough sell.
Not to mention the fact that we were not very impressive in meetings.
Yeah, well, take this meeting for example. Yeah.
How did the three of you team up?
We were friends from Milwaukee. Actually, our fathers were business partners. Our sisters were college roommates. Our mothers were friends. And we just kind of, and Jerry and I were brothers. So, we just kind of got together. After I graduated from college, Jim was working in Milwaukee as a private investigator, and Jerry was a senior in college at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I managed to borrow some videotape from my dad's friend, and we just thought we'd start a theater. We hooked up with another guy named Dick Chudnow, and we combined a live skits with the videotape on stage, and that became Kentucky Fried Theater.
And from the beginning, did you find your humor meshed well, or was that a matter of spending a lot of time together that it congealed?
One of the things that we shared was that we didn't want to do political humor, and it was during the time of Vietnam and assassinations and a pretty rough time in American history, and we instinctively, it's not like we said, hey, we're going to stay away from that, but we just sort of instinctively chose to make fun of movies and commercials and stuff instead.
So you have the idea of Robert Stack, Elliot Ness from The Untouchables, ultra straight, arrow, super serious, and with the voice that goes with it. Then was it picturing him that you thought, well, let's do a whole whole series of characters with similar sorts of resumes, and that in and of itself is funny?
We were watching Zero Hour, and so we wanted it to look just like Zero Hour, and really very much we were making fun of a 1950s, 60s style of acting, where they were, you know, the actors really took themselves seriously, and they had two speeds, on and off. And so it, at some point we just sort of said, hey, why don't we cast it like that? I mean, those four roles. The tricky thing was getting the actors not to just kind of play it straight, because everybody thinks they're playing it straight when they're not, but to get them to act as though they didn't know they were in a comedy. And that's what we kept repeating, and we kept saying, another take, do it straight, don't be funny. And that's hard for someone in a comedy just to not be funny.
Yeah, and Leslie Nielsen, who eventually became the best at it, at the first table read, you guys probably remember, he put a little spin on it, I think.
Yeah.
And so we actually sent him home with a video, with a VHS of Zero Hour. And he watched it, and he came back the next day and had it 100%. He had that doctor down.
Let me bring Robert Hayes, star of the film, into the conversation. Bob, thank you so much for joining us from Hawaii, particularly. Appreciate. You were doing a network television sitcom at the time, weren't you? And was this done during hiatus of the show?
I was doing a show called Angie at the time, and which was on the same lot. And when the hiatus came up between the seasons, it was a mid-season replacement. The first was a half season, and then we were picked up for the second season. And we began filming during that four-week hiatus that we had, or 5 weeks, I think it was. And it overlapped by 2 weeks at the end of it. So I was doing both of them at the same time for the last 2 weeks of Airplane.
Yeah, that must have been exhausting to be working on both simultaneously. So
I hadn't been that tired up to that point. I hadn't been that tired yet in my life.
Well, and the film is so demanding. When you read the script for the film, what were your thoughts?
I was on an airplane. I was flying to Minneapolis with Donna Peskow, who was in Angie. She played Angie. And we were flying with Howard Cosell and a bunch of ABC people to Minneapolis for the changeover of a TV station from NBC to ABC. And there was something on every single page that made me laugh out loud, made some noise come out, not just your smile at it. I mean, something made me laugh out loud.
Let's see one of the scenes from the film that you're in. In this flashback within the film, his girlfriend, Elaine Dickinson, played by Julie Haggerty, visits him in a psychiatric hospital.
I found a wonderful apartment for us. Has a brick fireplace and a cute little bedroom with mirrors on the ceiling. And
Red leader, I'm going down.
Captain Jolene. He thinks he's a pilot, still fighting the war.
I found the tunnel, Johnson! It's this way! $25 for a cigarette is too much!
Oh.
What's his problem?
It's Lieutenant Hurwitz. Severe shell shock. Thinks he's Ethel Merman.
You'll be swell! You'll be great! Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here, start now. Honey, everything's coming up right.
War is hell.
Well, we'll get to Ethel Merman's casting in a moment. But Bob, working with Julie Haggerty, you know, I'm so impressed. Her timing, her ability with physical comedy.
I've been doing television, so I had more experience in front of the camera than she had. She'd been a model and had done an off Broadway show, I think. But I was lucky in that I got to test with Julie. So, and I just loved working with her and Lorna. I mean, these folks are incredible. Just the most talented folks you can imagine. So I lucked out. I coasted on their coattails.
Well, you had great chemistry, the two of you. And I want to go back to Jerry, David, and Jim. Did you sense when they were testing that they had that chemistry?
They were definitely our favorites, and that's why we tested them together. So, I mean, Bob thinks he was fortunate, but we knew he was the guy.
The part of Ted Stryker, people kept coming in. We didn't think the lines were funny because they just weren't, it just wasn't happening. And Bob read, and we were all like, it is funny.
More to come on our Film Week and Chill series. We've got the creators and stars of the 1980 comedy Airplane. We'll be back in a moment.
Get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Tighten me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound out of med side.
What it is, Big Mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack.
One of my favorite clips from the 1980 parody Airplane. Barbara Billingsley of Leave It to Beaver in that scene. Let's get right back into the conversation with the creators that made it happen, co-writers, directors Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker, casting director Joel Thurm, actress Lorna Patterson-Lembeck. Lorna played Randy, the singing stewardess.
Lorna, what was it like filming your scenes in the movie and describe? Because it was obviously a very fast-paced shoot.
You know, I was very young. This was one of my first jobs. Joel can attest to that. Yeah. I think I was very early 20s. I was just so happy to be. I was on a lot. I was in a movie. I was with wonderful people. I got to sit next to Howard Koch. And, you know, I was just so happy to be there. And whatever Jerry told me to do, I just wanted to please them. That's really, and it was just so fun. It was such a happy place. I never in my life of show business in life, I never had another experience that happy and fun. It was just a great place to be.
Well, Joel, let me bring you in, casting director of the film, Joel Thurm, also worked on a number of other prominent films, including Grease and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So we have Leslie Nielsen, Robert Stack, Lloyd Bridges, Peter Graves, and of course, Ethel Merman. So with so many of these people that audiences know, but seeing them totally out of the environment they would have been in before, was there much convincing that you had to do?
Well, the convincing, as was said before, was some of the characters who just didn't get it at first. You know, like Peter Graves, who just, you know, like you said, he threw the script across the room or something, but his kids, you know, said, "Dad, this is really funny." And, you know, and they convinced him to do it. And, you know, I wasn't there when they read their scripts, so I really don't know, but there was a little resistance. There was a lot of resistance for the two leads. I mean, I work on movies that everybody doesn't get right away. The turndowns for Rocky Horror and this for the leading roles were enormous. Yeah. You know, people just didn't get it by reading the script.
Let me bring into the conversation our critics, Christy and Tim. Christy, what stands out most to you about the film?
Well, I was about 8 years old when it came out, and I look back at that now and think, man, my parents were permissive, because it's a pretty racy movie in retrospect. But having watched it so many times since then, the thing that makes it timeless for me is the wordplay. Because you got a lot of pop culture references, you got a lot of slapstick, you got some really amazingly clever little things going on in the background, like in that last clip with the two guys who were attached to the shoulder trying to tug each other. But the delivery, the deadpan delivery, and just the way it sneaks up on you, Leslie Nielsen especially, with, you know, things like, it's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Like versions of that kind of line over and over again are what really make this film timeless for me.
Well, and to me, it's so influential, not that anyone has done parody in the same way. In fact, we don't, I don't think we see as much parody now. Key and Peele certainly, you know, with their television show did it beautifully, but it doesn't seem to me like we're in an era where there's a lot of it. But this film raised the bar on the spoof, I think, Christy.
Well, it's so hard to do it well, because I think a lot of parodies are like, here's a thing you know, and here's a thing you know, and here's another thing you know, and we're just gonna do them. And you're gonna laugh out of recognition, and that should be enough, theoretically. But it's really not. And so to find the balance that you guys all found here is so tough. And that's why you see so many films trying to recreate that magic, and really none have.
Tim, you have a favorite part of this film?
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that extremely meta scene where he's playing co-pilot Roger Murtaugh, who's actually Kareem. That's a scene that we and the jive talking scene, of course. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I got to tell you, guys, as I watch this movie, and I understand that you didn't want these actors playing these as comedic sort of roles, but am I wrong? And that I suspect you guys were all fans of the Marx Brothers. Do I detect some Marx Brothers fans, some Three Stooges fans, maybe even a little W.C. Fields fans in there? I'm a Midwest guy too, and I think that strain runs through us. Would that be correct?
Absolutely, we're big Marx Brothers fans. We used to, before, you know, they had the internet. I mean, when we were in college, they would have these film festivals where you'd have 600 stoned students in a room watching Duck Soup. And, you know, that really, and the zaniness of the Marx Brothers and the slapstick combined with the very witty wordplay had a definite effect on us. I mean, to a lesser extent, the Three Stooges, because they were only slapstick. They didn't have the wit, which really transcended that, all that stuff.
Mad Magazine was also
a huge
influence on us.
And later, Woody Allen. When we saw what Woody Allen was doing in films like Bananas, we thought, okay, we can do this. We could be on this level. We have this thing. But our breakthrough was doing it without comedians.
Tim, you were going to continue, and I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that I detected a direct through line from Airplane to the films in the Black community anyway. Robert Townsend's Hollywood Shuffle a few years later. Keenan Ivory Wayne's I'm Gonna Get You Sucker a few years later. Yeah. Right through to Keenan's films, the whole series of scary movie parodies that were based on that. I detect the through line right through all of those films, influenced primarily by Airplane, if I'm not mistaken. I imagine you guys probably do too.
We saw in 1975, you saw a movie called Shaft, starring Robert Rountree. Richard Rountree. And it was what they call a blaxploitation movie. And we liked it, and we walked out of the theater and we said, it was good, but we couldn't understand what the actors were saying. And so we had this thought, well, what if we have these Black guys on the airplane and subtitle them with stupid white guy subtitles? And when Airplane came out, I wasn't sure, we weren't sure, was that gonna be offensive or not? But when we went to see the movie with a Black audience, they laughed harder than the white audience. And we thought inadvertently, perhaps, we had tapped into the tone deafness of the white community to the whole Black experience.
My thanks to the writers, directors of Airplane, Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker, that part of our Film We Can Chill virtual series. Also, the stars of the film, Robert Hayes and Lorna Patterson-Lembeck joining me, Joel Thurm, the casting director of the film, and thanks to our Film Week critics, Tim Cogshell and Christy Lemire. You can watch the entire conversation about Airplane at kpecc.org/in-person. And a reminder that you can download the podcast of Film Week wherever you get your podcasts and listen when it's convenient to you. From all of us, have a wonderful Independence Day weekend.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.